There are many obstacles that get in our way when we are asked to do something in the service of the Lord. They're legitimate, some of them. They're real. One of the biggest obstacles to agreeing to service are feelings of inadequacy. We feel like we're inadequate. We couldn't possibly do that. God didn't prepare us for it. He didn't give us the gift that we need. And the list goes on and on and on as to why we don't serve. One of the things Renee and I have learned at Calvary Chapel is that sometimes God calls on you to do things and you don't have a gift in that area. How many of you can relate the story of Moses? What was his excuse to God? Now, most theologians believe it was probably stuttering. I am slow of speech. Send my brother, Aaron, because he's glib and he can speak well before the Pharaoh. But God didn't call on Aaron, the glib one. He called on Noah, the one that quite possibly... Thank you, Renee. Renee says I get nouns mixed up all the time. So far, I've always called her Renee. But I have it written in the palm of my hand so I can look, so that I can look down. Moses probably stuttered. Consequently, he didn't want to go. Let's have a word of prayer. Thank you, Father, for the blessings of being here. Thank you for the privilege of standing before this group. We again ask you to be with Junho and Karen as they take a ministry and vacation leave. And I ask you to prepare my heart, clip my tongue, because this is holy ground. In Christ's name, amen. I know every one of you at least a little, and most of you know me at least a little. We all have gifts. We all have our deficiencies, and they're intertwined into our character. And by the time you get to most of our ages, they are so big a part of us that we all, if we're willing, recognize our own. You and I are the people that make up the Christian community in this case, at Calvary Chapel of Sahuarita. You and I have known the well-known, the little-known, and the unknown. I've had the opportunity to see and hear many great men of God in my lifetime. I heard and I saw Dr. Billy Graham in Georgia at Atlanta's stadium. Dr. Graham has preached to over 215 million people in person. It's incalculable how many people have seen him on television or have had one of his tapes. I heard and I saw at Henderson State University, my college, Dr. R.G. Lee. Anybody ever heard of Dr. R.G. Lee? Nobody? Dr. R.G. Lee was a pastor of a church in Memphis, and he preached a sermon one time called Payday Someday. It is probably the best-known single sermon ever preached. He preached it over 1,200 times in his lifetime. Not at his church, but he went all over the world preaching that one sermon that whatever you do, one day, you're going to pay for it. Payday someday. I've heard and I've seen Herb Shreve. Herb was my pastor for several years. He was the best man in our wedding, and he's still a dear friend. Now, Herb has preached all over the United States, primarily at biker rallies, where he saw a need for a ministry to the bikers who otherwise had no influence of Christian proportions. He saw the need, and he started CMA. It is now in 18 countries, every state of the union, and more are coming. That's very possible. I think some of them have different, some of them have different names. However, some of the people that I have had to impact my life the most are people you've never heard of. They're people that they're very quiet. They don't get the headlines. They're not the ones that even in the Christian community, they are elevated to a proportion of saying this is a person after whom we should follow in the way he or she has submitted themselves to God. I want to introduce you to just a few of those people who have impacted me the most. And then if you have one at the end of this, I want you to tell me that also. Somebody read Mark 14, 3 through 9. If you have, I'd rather have it out of the New King James Version. Mark 14, 3 through 9. You can read the first two if you wish, but how many of you ever read a verse 10, 20, or 100 times? And, you know, you read it, and it didn't mean anything, but then one day you read it, and something in that jumped off the page after you. I still remember the first time I read in Isaiah, where he said the sphere of the earth, that, you know, we discovered the earth was round in 1492. Is that the way that, which was what, about 4,000 years separating those, several thousand anyway. He knew it was a sphere at the time, but we had to send that character with the three ships all the way across for us to figure it out. But this verse jumped off the page. Read for me again, please, the first half of verse 8. First half. Yes, please. Oh, okay. Just the first full phrase.
Okay. She has done what she could.
Okay. Now, there's conjecture as to whether this was Mary, the sister of Lazarus. Others believe it was Mary Magdalene. It really doesn't make any difference. She did what she could. They were at Bethany. If you'll look just to the right of Jerusalem, you'll see that Bethany was only 2 miles from Jerusalem. And that's where Jesus spent the night. And then he came back into the city for the Last Supper on the following day. This occurred on Thursday. She did what she could. I want to introduce you to four people tonight that, in my view, they did what they could. This is Dr. Hugh Cantrell. He was a professor of religion at Ouachita Baptist University. He no doubt taught Mike Huckabee, who I don't think is dead politically yet, so he has had the opportunity to at least teach the governor of Arkansas for 10.5 years. You never know where the teaching word that you have done is going to go, but it went into the governor's capital for 10.5 years. Being a professor of religion, you would think that when a call came to preach a revival, and it was to a small church, who would he send? The newest freshman at the whole college. He would send the one that hadn't been out before. I don't want to go to a little old bitty place. But Dr. Hugh went himself. He held a revival in that little old bitty church. It's truly a church that very well may go 3 or 4 or even 6 months and never be seen, because it is one of those little country churches in the Dale. Now, you would expect Dr. Hugh to go to a church that would have 300 people and that would require a really nice motel and a charge account with a restaurant nearby, so he would be able to preach to large numbers and live in comfort. Well, Dr. Hugh preached at that church, and instead of having a motel nearby, and instead of eating at a nice restaurant, he stayed at that house while he was there, preaching to maybe 25 or 30 people. And that's where he ate all of his meals, too. He did not require the big motel or the really nice restaurant. And by the way, that little old house housed the visiting ministers in that community. I know from about 1950 until my dad died in 77. That's Miss Millie. If you saw Miss Millie on the street, you would think, what a frumpy lady. You know, she's overweight, she's not particular, she's not good looking, she's graying, her shoulders are slew. Miss Millie is not an attractive person. When Miss Millie was a little baby, she had several emotional and physical and mental disabilities. They were about to assign her to a mental institution to be warehoused for the remainder of her days. That's what the doctors had said. Give her up, sign her over to the state, and that way they can take care of her and you can move on with your life. You can come by and see her, but you know, there's no sense in being tied down. The grandfather said, uh-uh. No, if you're not going to take care of her, you let me have her and I'll do what I can do. I still remember getting to church at Calvary in Austell, Georgia, and Miss Millie was waiting for me. And as soon as I came down that hall, stepped into the auditorium, Jerry, I need to talk to you over here in the corner now. Yes, ma'am, Miss Millie, whatever you say. And she was so concerned because she had been asked to come to Savannah to accept an award. And Miss Millie didn't really want to go because she was afraid it would affect her humility. Now, if anybody else came to me and they said, you know, I'm afraid this will affect my humility if I take this. Boy, you're really concerned about this, aren't you? You want me to... No. There was no guile in Miss Millie. She was truly afraid of what it would do to her witness if she went down and accepted that award. And I encouraged her, go take the award, Millie. You've worked hard. She said, I thought those people hated me over at the mental institutions. Because I'll go in, and if there's a problem that I see and they don't want to deal with, I'll stay with them all day long until they get it fixed. I thought they hated me. And when I was preparing for this, I decided, you know, I'm not sure what this award was. I think it was Volunteer of the Year in Children's Mental Health for the state of Georgia. So I started looking on the internet to be sure what to call it. And I never did find that. And I put Millie Kennard in and I went through Google. Anybody ever use Google? You can't have a computer without using Google. I Googled her name, and I said, well, maybe her name is not Millie. It's Mildred. So I put Mildred Kennard in, and I asked, how do you spell her name? Renee said, oh, you're spelling it wrong, C-U-N-N-A-R-D. And that popped up, Mildred Kennard, but it said N-A-M-I. And now that can't be. It's President Mildred Kennard. And then I noticed a little bit later that she had offices in downtown Atlanta. Well, it still can't be Mildred Kennard. Miss Millie, that's just not Mildred. And then I saw Austell, Georgia as her home address. I guess it's the Georgia chapter, but she's now president. The president. Probably the Georgia chapter. National Association for the Mentally Ill. Probably the Georgia chapter. I never did find... Millie called us about 2 months ago. First time I'd heard from her in years. And she just wanted to know how we were. She didn't mention that. And if I called her and asked her about it, I wish you'd never found that out. That's just so silly. Those people don't have good sense for doing that to me. This is somebody else. This is... I think his name is Uncle Bob. I never saw Uncle Bob. I only heard about him from one of my best friends back in Georgia. Uncle Bob, I tried to find a graphic that had two canes because, you see, Uncle Bob walked on two canes with club feet. He walked to church on two canes and club feet every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, and every Wednesday night. And when he got there, he never spoke to anyone because Uncle Bob was both deaf and dumb. Couldn't say a word, couldn't hear a word. But he did that for years. And one young lady went down to Uncle Bob and wrote him a note. Said, Uncle Bob, you can't hear or see anything, and you get here on two canes and club feet. Why do you bother? And he said, I don't want anybody to ever wonder whose side I'm on. So the next time you start to lay in bed on Sunday morning, I want you to listen and see if you hear Uncle Bob saying, "Boy, you think anybody's going to wonder whose side you're on if you stay in bed today?" I've heard him before. When Renee and I decided to move to Atlanta, Georgia, we were at a Christian assembly in the mountains of Glorieta. And everybody that came in, we asked them, "Know anything about Atlanta?" Because I'd signed a contract. I was moving to Atlanta, Georgia. And I had never been more than 2 miles east of the Mississippi River. And I was moving all the way to the last state in the deep south over there. Florida doesn't count because it's cosmopolitan. Georgia. Georgia is the south. And I met a man named Griffith, whose daddy was L.O. Griffith. And he said, "Yeah, I live in Atlanta." Well, you know, I grabbed him by one hand, Renee grabbed him by the other hand, and we held him down until we got all the information we could from Mr. Griffith. And in the course of the conversation, he said his dad had worked at the Home Mission Board downtown, and like many of those old country churches, they couldn't afford to pay a pastor. So there were people that had full-time jobs that volunteered to go to those small churches and preach on Sunday. His daddy was one of those people. Now, his daddy went up on Sunday morning, as most preachers did. They ate lunch with somebody, spent the afternoon with them, probably ate supper before going to church. Back there, it's supper. It's not dinner. Don't like having dinner in Arizona, but we have it all the time anyway. And then he'd go to church and home with somebody to spend the night. And this one Sunday, he did that. He preached on Sunday morning, went and spent the afternoon with a couple, had lunch and dinner with them. And then he went to church and preached that night, and he went home with this very elderly, poor, mountain, Appalachian-style people. And he got to their house, and they went in, and they said, "Your bedroom's in there. I know you'll have to get up early in the morning to get back to Atlanta." So he went into this bedroom, and they came in and lit the little lamp because they didn't have electricity, and they went out. And he went over and took his jacket off and took his shirt off, laid them on a chair and took his pants off and laid them on the chair and sat down to take off his... Bam! Did I wake you up? The bed made the most horrible sound in the world. And he jumped up and bam again. You know, what is wrong? And he walked slowly around the bed, and he found that one of the corners of the bed had broken off, and they were using a chair under the corner of the bed so that it would stay upright. And boy, they don't have much of a guest room, do they? I mean, this is the best they can do. It's a bed with one corner broken up. So he went over, and this time he sat down and just kind of a little bit of a thud. And he got his shoes off, and he thought, "You know, I'm not going to stand up again. I'm just going to stay just like this, and I'm going to lay down, and I'm going to go to bed." And he laid down, blew out the lamp, and as he laid down, he, "Oh, my word, this is the worst mattress I have ever been on in my life. It's lumpy. There are deep holes in it. There's big old springs. This is horrible. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to stay real still, and I'm going to make it through this night, and then I'm getting out of here." And he heard the cracking of eggs and smelled the frying of bacon the next morning. He started to quickly get up. And then he remembered, "No, if I jump up, that bed's going to go bam again." So he got up slowly and he went out into the room. And he said, "Thank goodness I'm away from that guest room." And he stepped out and he was talking to the old man and the old woman. The old woman was down here. She was up against the wall with a wooden cook stove cooking biscuits, fried eggs, scrambled eggs, bacon. Over there were those, you know, those two ladder back chairs, you know what I'm talking about, that had cane in the bottom. They were leaning against the wall with a couple of quilts in them. There was a door, and over here was an old dilapidated couch that looked like maybe it was 100 years old. And in the course of the conversation, he realized there's only two rooms going out of here. One of those doors, I mean, two doors in this room, one of them goes out where we parked our cars last night. One of them goes in where I slept last night. Then he realized. He wasn't in the guest bedroom. He was in the only bedroom. And the old man and the old woman had set up in chairs, ladder back chairs, with quilts. He didn't get their best. He got their only. Now, how many of you have ever had someone affect your life that is little known or unknown? Most of us. May have been a Sunday school teacher. May have been somebody that just walked by on the street and you smiled at them. We've got a couple of minutes, but if anybody has one of those they'd like to tell us about, I'm certainly open to it. Anybody? You have them, but you're shy.
I had a sudden effect in my life.
So that one Sunday school lesson has stuck with you that long. Well, I have remembered those old preachers coming to our house. I guess the first one probably came when I was... That's probably been at least 50 years ago that they were coming to our house. And I would never have heard of them except for tonight. We just don't hear about those little people that impact our life so very, very much. Thank you all very, very much.